Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. I see a couple more folks are coming in. We still got a few open seats, so that's good to see. I would like to thank everybody for coming this morning. I know last night there were a bunch of parties. I also know it was raining very hard, so maybe folks didn't get out to those, but I'm glad to see everyone here bright and early at 9 o'clock for the first session. So today we're going to be talking about developing applications and adding intelligence to them using the Microsoft Cognitive Services APIs. My name is Matt Winkler. I'm a group program manager at Microsoft in the data group, where I spend most of my time focusing on the cognitive services, as well as a number of other things in the artificial intelligence space. Now, before we get into the presentation, I just want to do a quick show of hands, just to kind of understand the audience, and we'll make a couple of little tweaks to the presentation based on what happens next. How many folks would describe themselves as a developer? Okay. How many folks would describe themselves as a data scientist? Okay, so 95% developer, about 5% data scientist. How many folks are using Azure today? Okay, thank you. How many folks are using some of our machine learning services like Azure Machine Learning? Okay, about 20 people. How many folks have used the Microsoft Cognitive Services before? Okay. Tomorrow morning, if I were to ask this question, I want all of you to raise your hands yes for that one, okay? All right, so what we'll do today, go a little bit of background, kind of what are these things, why are we doing them, why are we doing them now, talk a little bit about customers. We'll give some case studies of what we see customers doing with these things today. And then we're going to go into a pretty long non-slide section where we'll walk through how to get started with cognitive services. The nice thing will be for everybody who's got a laptop and Wi-Fi, you can follow along as we go do this. I'll show the ways to think about integrating them into your applications, and then we'll actually go into the cognitive services. There's over 20 of them, so we're not going to be able to spend a ton of time on each of them. We'll go deep in a few of them and hopefully give you enough pointers to go dive deep if other ones are interesting to you. Then I want to close up with, how do you actually go from just starting to develop with these to taking them to production and scaling? And then how do these fit into an overall application pattern? Okay, we'll save questions to the end. I'll reserve about 10 minutes at the end so that we can get to questions. And kind of we're at this very fun part in time for the industry, where we've really got three different things coming together. It used to be, when I'd give these talks, we'd kind of talk about two big things that were coming together, which is kind of the ever-decreasing cost of storing data, which means we can now keep lots and lots of data, as well as the cloud. The other thing that's really happening, and how many folks went to Satya's keynote the other day? Okay, about 70% of the room. The things that are happening in the artificial intelligence space, that space is just exploding right now. And it is really transforming how customers are approaching building their applications and the capabilities they can put into their applications. So if you think about how we're approaching it from Microsoft's perspective, we'll go bottom to top in this slide. And it really starts off with the infrastructure that's required to store and analyze a massive amount of data. This started out inside the company when we had this little problem, which is how do we store a copy of the internet and build a search experience on top of it? But it's expanded over time, and it includes the open source ecosystem of Hadoop and Spark, as well as all of those technologies that we're using internally. We're taking these and we're making these available. Now, the next thing is that on top of that, we've got a bunch of very interesting data. That earlier point about our copy of the internet lets us do a lot of research on what's happening out in the world. And for that research, we've got, you know, one of the largest computer science faculties in the world at Microsoft working on all sorts of fascinating and interesting problems. And so you get this very nice combination of, we've got some very smart people working on algorithms, and you don't even necessarily have to have a great algorithm if you have a lot of data. But we've got a lot of data. So we've got great algorithms and we've got a lot of data. And so what this allows us to do is really create deep understanding of a lot of different things, whether those are images or speech or video or web pages. And so then as we start to surface this up for customers to consume, there's a couple of different layers here. The first is a set of tools that we've got around data science and machine learning. These are for people who want to build algorithms on top of data. And so for the set of folks that raised their hand and said, yes, I'm a data scientist or I'm an aspiring data scientist, these are the types of things that you're going to be interested in using. But we also recognize that there's a lot of people out there who don't want to go down that path. You know, they want to go and just make their application better. And they can make it better with all of these things that we're talking about, with interesting algorithms, with data. And so the cognitive services, which I'll spend the rest of the talk talking about, really are this set of finished APIs. So you don't have to worry about all of the statistics and all of the science that's happening under the covers. You just get to take advantage of all of the things happening lower in the stack, and you get a nice REST endpoint that lets you say, hey, tell me how many people are in this image. And then on top of that, we and partners are building solutions to also make it easier to accomplish tasks. Everything kind of below this solution line is really targeted at somebody who's writing code. So I'm glad to see kind of, I think the bulk of the room raised their hand for the I'm a developer or a data scientist, so you should be comfortable with most of the things that we'll show here. Okay, so I want to talk about two different case studies. So the first one is Uber. How many folks are familiar with Uber? Okay, cool. How many took one here this morning? Okay, about 5% of the room. So we talked about this, we showed a video for this in Satya's keynote the other night, but Uber has this interesting problem, which is that they want to be able to verify the identity of their drivers. And they want to do this to keep all of us safe, and they want to do this to keep their drivers safe so that their drivers' accounts don't get compromised. And so in the span of a few weeks, the folks at Uber were able to build into their driver's application a facial verification. And so what that allows them to do is when the driver goes to sign in, it will actually prompt the driver to take a selfie, and it'll compare that with the images that are on file, right? And then this uses an API that we call the Face API. We'll show that in a little bit. And one of the features of the Face API is that it will allow you to say, are these two faces the same? Right? And it'll adjust for things like hats and glasses and things like that. And so this is something that they've deployed. This is running in production now. And it's, you know, the driver for the set of folks that raised their hand this morning may have used this. Second case study is an interesting one from Portugal. It's Portugal Telecom. And what they're looking to do is, in their set-top boxes and in their media delivery, they want to be able to create more engagement with their customers. Why are they interested in doing this? Well, as their customers consume more content, they can A, sell more ads, and B, potentially upsell them to premium content. So it's super important to them to be able to say, to surface content to a customer that's relevant. If all I watch is sports, and when I click the guide button, a bunch of romantic comedies come up, that's not really great for me. I'm not really happy with that. And they're not going to be happy because I'm not going to click buy on any of the romantic comedies. Now, if there were Hoosiers or Rudy or some of the great sports classic movies, I would click buy in a second. And so what they're doing is they're using another cognitive service API called the Recommendations API. And what the Recommendations API allows you to do is very, very quickly put into your application a very powerful recommendation engine. And that's what they're using to surface the recommended media experiences. And what's cool about this is when we talk with them, the marked increase that they see in conversion, they've seen a very clear uptick in the amount of consumers that are consuming content, and they're consuming more content. And so now let's talk about the cognitive services. So as I mentioned, the cognitive services are a set of over 20 finished APIs. We've divided them up into five different categories. And these are the categories that I'll use to kind of talk about them throughout the rest of the day. And this really refers to what are we trying to do with the APIs. So the first is vision. This is about understanding images and video. And how do I go from images and video to really understand what's inside of them? You know, that's not something that's accessible to most of us right now. Even if we took a computer vision class at some point in time, that's probably not the tool set and skill set that's kind of top of mind for us when we sit down on a Monday morning to work on our application. The next one is about speech. This continues this idea of going from something that's traditionally been fairly opaque to us as developers and transforming it into things that we can use. And so this lets us understand speech as well as transform text into speech. The next one is really about language. And if you think about what I just said about images and speech, we still have that problem with language, right? When we have everything in a nice rectangle in a database with clear columns that's nice and normalized, we can reason about that really, really well. When I have a paragraph of text or an entire book of text, it's tough for me as a developer to be able to reason about that. Like, what's actually happening there? What's important in the text? And so the language APIs allow you to do that same thing, which is go from text into understanding what's actually happening there. And there's a couple of cool services that we'll do a number of demos about later. The next category is knowledge. And this is about the next level of understanding and comprehending what's going on with a rich set of data. And so what this will allow you to do is, an example here is our entity linking service. And what the entity linking service allows you to do is really understand in text the words that are being used. And it's built on top of all of the entities that are inside of Wikipedia. And what's cool about this is, within context, it will understand if you're referring to Mars the planet or Mars the mythological god, right? And then you can actually kind of reason about that, like what else is related to mythology or planets and those types of things. The final category is search. And this really takes advantage of that giant data set that we talked about earlier, you know, kind of sitting at the bottom of the stack, which is our copy of the internet. How can you take that and put that into your application? Okay, so that's an overview of the five different categories of cognitive services. What I'd like to do now is really kind of go 0 to 60. And the way to start off with this is if you want to follow along, go to microsoft.com/cognitive, and that's where we'll start. So this is the landing page, and the reason I like to show this is that this is actually a pretty comprehensive view of what all of the APIs are and what are their capabilities. If I simply go to the API category, I can pick something like computer vision, and it's going to highlight what are the various capabilities. So here is the analyze an image capability, and we'll talk more about vision, so I don't want to kind of do too much here, but let me go ahead and click on another image. And what you're going to see is this is going to analyze the image. Let me zoom in here. And this is going to return, hey, I think it's a large brick building with green grass in front of a house. And what's the confidence? 71%. Okay, well, there's brick, there's a building, there's green grass. So that's the caption. So it generated that entire sentence. And it's about 70% confident that that's a good description of what's going on. Then what we see a lot of people doing is it returned a set of tags. What are the objects in the pictures? And so we're, 7/9 of certainty that there's grass in the picture. We're less confident that it's residential. It's a house, it's a building, the sky is there. So that is one of the capabilities of the Vision API. And what you can actually do is scroll through here and see, oh, we've got a celebrity recognition model, so we can actually kind of see this, and it'll come back and say, yes, that's my boss. There's over 200,000 celebrities, so this goes through the A-list, B-list, C-list, D-list, and whatever comes after that. And then this pattern also, when we'll talk more when we get into the Vision API, we see people using this for video as well. And so what's nice about this is this demonstrates all of the capabilities of the API, and then I can also see as a developer what's going on. And so all of these are the API call, and what happens behind the scenes is I'm just going to get a JSON payload back, right? And so I can already see just from this website, hey, what's the JSON payload that would come back from the API? This is what I'm going to then process in my application. Okay. And if you want to get started here, you can create an account. All of these are available as a free trial, so you can kind of get started right away. The next two things that I want to show are kind of going deeper into an API. And the first is going to be the documentation, and then we'll go to the API reference. So the documentation kind of goes beyond the just high-level description of what's happening. This will talk specifically about, hey, what are the different capabilities? You know, for instance, we'll recognize up to 2,000 recognizable objects, and I'll walk through this. This will actually point to the research papers. So if you're interested in kind of the magic behind this, the research papers are pointed to, so you can kind of see what's happening in the field and what's leading to building these APIs. And then the other thing that's worth pointing out here, in addition to the other topics, will be the API reference. Now, all of the cognitive services are just HTTP APIs, right? So you, anything that can talk HTTP, you can talk to cognitive services. And so the important thing for us to do is document that. And so by clicking on API reference, this will take you to the reference page for a given API. And there's a couple of things that I want to show here. The first is it'll walk through the basic categories of the top-level resources and the actions you can perform on them. So here I'm looking at the Face API. There is a Face resource where I can detect, I can find similar, I can group, identify. And if I click on any of these, we'll click on detect. This then walks me through the API, all of the details of what the URL needs to look like, what are their parameters. This is really everything I need to go put this into my application, a little bit about what the JSON payload to and from will look like. And then the two really nice things about this, and one of the problems is this is kind of hidden at the bottom, but everybody should kind of do this, is if you scroll all the way down, this is after we get through the error codes, there's actually the code samples. And so this is across 8 different languages on how you actually call this. And what's cool about this is I can go right from here, I can copy and paste this, I have to change one thing to put my subscription key in, and I can start calling this API. And similarly, if I want to call it from C#, if I want to call it from Java, JavaScript, Objective-C, PHP, Python, or Ruby, I get this code right away. Now, if you look at these 8 and say, no, I don't use any of them, I use Scala or R. So quick show of hands, any Scala developers? Okay, we had 3 at the bot framework talk I gave yesterday. 0 here. Any R developers? Okay, about 10. So say you wanted to generate Scala or R. The other thing to show here is, oops. That's a demo I'll show in a little bit. The final thing to show here is up at the top, this will actually download the Swagger file. And so for folks who aren't familiar with Swagger, it's a description format for HTTP APIs. So you can actually take that into the Swagger toolchain and say, hey, I'd like to go generate a client in Scala or generate a client in R. And so all of this is how you go from discovering what does the API do, how do I use it, to this is actual code that I can go ahead and use. So let's do an example real quick. So the first one will be, I'm going to show calling the text analytics API. And so I'm showing Python here. I could just as easily show C#. But this is basically copied and pasted from that website. I added a little bit to do some I/O off of my machine. But the nice thing about this is how simple this is. We actually won't spend a lot of time in this talk on how do you call these, because all we're doing is making HTTP calls. And there's already such a nice tool chain for that and SDKs. But here I open up the text file. This is the one tricky part here, which is constructing the body. This is what the payload looks like. And so what you're doing here is creating the JSON payload that gets sent up. The only tricky part here is how frequently you generate JSON. I'm a program manager, which means I only get to use Visual Studio a couple of times a week. And so I'm a little rusty on that. So this is where I end up spending a little bit of time, is making sure I craft the payload correctly. Then I just turn around and send an HTTP post. Again, this is based off that description that I saw on the other site. And then what gets returned back is just that JSON document. And so here what I'm doing is I'm extracting out and printing what are the key phrases. You can do a whole lot more with the JSON payload that comes back. And when I run this, what this is going to do is return the a bunch of key phrases that come out of a third chapter of War and Peace. And so what you'll see here, you'll see a number of the key characters as well as a number of key phrases that appear kind of throughout. This is interesting because you can take this to then try and understand a little bit more what's going on in the text. Okay, so now we've discovered the APIs, we've learned about them, we've written some code, we've called them. Now, but you might look at this and say, hey, you're coding at the HTTP layer, like isn't there a little bit of an easier way to go about doing this? So the next thing that I would point you to is out on GitHub, you can just do this, you can go to GitHub, go to the Microsoft organization and just search for Cognitive. We've got 34 different repos here, and what you'll see is that we've got the naming convention is Cognitive, because that's the project, then what's the API, and then the platform. And so for something like Face or Vision, we've got Windows, iOS, Python, Android. Most of them will have a JavaScript binding as well. And what's nice about this, so I've downloaded all of these. We'll just walk through a little bit of the code here. So here is some Objective-C. Here we go. How many folks write iOS apps? Okay, about a little more than 10. So this is... This is an API that wraps around how to call the face service. So this is the implementation, and then from the code, I just have to deal with a face service client, so I don't have to mess around with HTTP. Similar things inside of .NET. Here we've got a face service client that we're returning back. We're calling detect. This fully supports the async pattern in C#, so you can use await and all of those nice things. But here, this is nice because now you just actually get objects. You don't have to kind of mess around with the JSON. The other thing that's nice about this is this will take the result and will marshal that JSON back into objects, so you can dot into things without having to kind of parse JSON documents. And just because I have now showed Python, Objective-C, C#. I will show Java, and at that point, I think I've showed more languages than I've ever showed in a single talk before. Here, this is also with Java. Again, same thing. Here's a face service client. And so we've built all of these with developers who use the language, so that should feel very natural to Java developers, to Objective-C developers. We've had times in the past where we've done it other ways, and so we have very C-sharpy SDKs and conventions that surface in Java, and it just confuses a lot of people. So the feedback we've gotten on these is that they're very, very natural for folks to use in the different languages. Okay. So there's a couple of links here. The other one that I want to show, there's an application that we call the Intelligent Kiosk. This application is fantastic. One, if you ever want to demo Cognitive Services, it's great for that. Two, it's a great place to borrow code from. And so what it is, it's an application. You can go to that URL and download it. And it's a set of interesting, different apps built with Cognitive Services. And so we'll start with the Face API Explorer. I will take a picture. Age is drastically wrong on that one. Wow. Where's my feedback link? But the cool thing that you can see here, and let me switch the page so it doesn't show that age. There we go. Is this actually will return something on the order of 30 different landmarks on your face. And so this is really cool. This shows scroll back down. This shows my eyes, my nose, the outline of my mouth. And this is interesting for a couple of reasons. One of which is if you want to write any app that puts like goofy stuff on top of people, you can do that very easily. If you want to put sunglasses or a mustache, you now have all of the points on a face to go do that. But it's also interesting for doing facial analysis, doing sizing, comparing facial features, those types of things. And so this is some of the data that gets returned. Go back here. And so this is just a really great app to go ahead and download. It's going to show you a number of different things. The other thing that's nice about this is for a lot of these, this will show how to go from a video stream into images that you can submit. That's always been kind of something hard for me. I don't know, I'm not super familiar with the media APIs in most of the languages, and so being able to see that is super, super helpful. We'll come back to the intelligent kiosk for a couple of more demos throughout the day, but I just wanted to point this out. Go and download this. This is a great tool to understand capabilities, as well as all of the source code is pretty, pretty valuable because it shows how to hook these up and run them in a real application. Okay. So now we're going to pivot kind of away from the general description, and we're going to start talking throughout the different categories. And on each of these, you know, as I said, there's, I think, 21 cognitive services today. We're not going to go super deep on them. If I did that, I would only be able to spend about just under 3 minutes on each of them for the entire session, and I don't think that's super, super useful. I'll be around after this. There's also a set of folks from the team that are down at the booth in the expo hall. So if you have questions on any of these, drop on by, and we can sit down and write some code and go as deep as you'd like on this. So the first one with the Vision API, I'll really talk about the first three here. And they really kind of increase in the how specific a task is being performed here. And so the Vision API is the most general API that we've got for vision. What this will allow you to do is look at an image, understand the number of objects in it, understand the number of people in it. It will do recognition of the objects. It's not just, hey, there are these objects. It'll say with a degree of probability what objects are there. This will also do things like the celebrity recognition and it will do the tagging as well as the celebrity recognition. It also will do some things like it can create smart thumbnails, which is kind of interesting as well. You know, because if you think about it, you want to be able to understand the picture to create thumbnails, right? You don't want to create a thumbnail of the top left-hand corner if there's nothing interesting there. That's not a useful thumbnail. You want to kind of take the group of people or the person's face and create the thumbnail off of that. Then we kind of step up in terms of the task being performed to the face API. The face API is really about faces. You know, which if you think about a lot of photographs are of people. The face API is going to let you understand what are the faces, where are they. This will do age detection on this. If anybody ever played with howold.net, that was just a really big app built on top of the face API. And then the final one is the emotion API. And that is kind of the most specific, which is, hey, I don't just want to recognize that there's a house. I don't want to just recognize that there's a woman standing in front of the house. It's not that I want to recognize that she's 32 years old. I want to know, is she happy, sad, disgusted? There's actually 7 different emotions that we can recognize. We've trained this across a fairly sizable data set, and we actually find it's got a pretty high degree of accuracy even across cultures. And so that's one specifically, if you want to understand emotion, you can go ahead and do that. And so we see some interesting use cases there. Well, actually, I'll just flip over to the kiosk to show a couple of them. And so this one is something we call real-time crowd insights. And if I had everybody up here, okay, I've lost 3 years already. We've got a ways to go. Okay, yeah, I'm smiling. And what you'll see is this is actually keeping track of, let me zoom in here. There's a couple things going on. This will keep track of the emotion. Now, if I had three or four of you come up here, we could all do this together. If I make a sad face, it'll show that I'm sad. This is great fun to play with until it's on a screen in front of 400 people. And man, 50, oh my gosh. It worked a whole lot better when I didn't have any hair. But so that's an example of the emotion API, and why this is interesting. You know, you can imagine I could have a little webcam up here, and I could be getting real-time feedback about how kind of all of the folks up here are reacting to my talk. And if I see smiles, it probably means I keep doing that. If I see disgust or contempt or anger, I'm probably doing something wrong and need to adjust that. And so we'll go back to the deck. And so those are the capabilities of the Vision API. The one tricky part with the Vision API, actually where I end up spending the most amount of time, again, is kind of that I/O part. Like, how do I go and read an image file on disk? How do I post that up? That's where the helper SDKs are very, very handy. There's also the other thing to show here. Is a very common pattern that we have, and what you actually just saw inside that inside the intelligent kiosk is analyzing video. And there's a video API which you can use, but actually what we see most of the time is if you just take a 1 second snapshot, like a keyframe every second, and send it up to the service, you can actually render the results in real time on the screen. So you can even do like facial tracking in almost real time, and a box will actually follow you pretty well with just a 1 second. You could take it down to half a second where you're taking the keyframe. But there's a nice sample on GitHub that walks through, because again, like the thing that's really hard for me about this is I have no idea how to work with video files. Like I know how to save them on my disk and double click them, but like from code, I don't know how to do anything with it. So, you know, that code about, hey, how to go from video file into keyframe is super, super handy. Okay. So now we'll go into the speech APIs. There really are two that I'll talk about here. The first one is the Bing Speech API. And what this gives you access to is text-to-speech and speech-to-text. This will integrate with some of the other services like Lewis, so I can talk about that in a little bit. But if you have an application need where across a wide variety of languages you want to be able to do speech to text, you can go ahead and do this. The second one that I'll talk about here is CRIS, or the Custom Recognition Intelligence Service. This is something that's in an invite-only preview right now. And what this allows you to do, and this is something that we'll talk about a little bit more, is a lot of times on these APIs, they're optimized around a general purpose model. So this Bing Speech API is tested against a massive amount of data, and it's very, very accurate in general. But what we find is specific use cases may be problematic. So if you think about manufacturing, and you want to be able to do speech to text from the manufacturing floor, there's a lot of background noise, there's a lot of things going on that probably aren't accounted for in a general model. And so what CRIS allows you to do is create a custom acoustic model. And so you can actually train and say, hey, this is the environment that I want to be able to recognize speech in, and increase the accuracy pretty dramatically. We worked with a major fast food restaurant. And if you can imagine the acoustic scenario of a drive-through, it's probably about like as harsh an environment as you can imagine for trying to recognize text from speech. You've got a bunch of background noise. You've got, you know, the engine is idling. The person is yelling. You know, when I go through the drive-thru, there may be other people in my car who are making a lot of noise because they're very excited about what they might get. That's a really tough acoustic model. And so what they found is that on most speech recognition, their accuracy rate was somewhere around 30%, which is basically almost unusable. With Chris, they were able to take that north of 80%. And so they were able to dramatically increase the effectiveness of recognizing the drive-through orders. And so if you're doing anything with kind of speech in kind of interesting acoustic environments, Chris is something that you can check out. So now let's talk a little bit about the language services. We now kind of fan out. There's five of them here. A few to touch on. So two points that I'll make on the spell check API and the web language model API. The reason that these are very, very interesting is that the data set that we train these on is something that most folks don't have access to, which is a copy of the internet, right? And so what this allows you to do is, with a much higher degree of accuracy than just writing a really great spell checking algorithm, it allows you to suggest spelling mistakes that are understood within the context of where that word shows up. And the way that we've built that is across the billions and billions of web pages that we've got sitting back at Microsoft. Same thing with the web language model. So what this allows you to do is, my favorite feature of this is this will actually take words that have no spaces and will suggest what the proper word breaks are. Why is this interesting? If you think about hashtags or URL slugs, where you want to actually figure out what are the component parts of that, this will, with a high degree of accuracy, go from that to, based on the probabilities of how all of these words show up on the internet, suggest to you, hey, this is how I would actually think about splitting up this hashtag, right? Because if you think about it, if you're listening to a Twitter stream for all references that to your company name, that's pretty easy in the first case. You can basically say, oh, I'm just going to look for hashtag company. But then, you know, you might be doing a really great job and they might say, you know, hashtag company rocks. Or you're not doing a great job and they say hashtag company something else. And even those are pretty basic. But then you want to kind of catch the long tail, which is hashtag I went to company and I had a great time. All as one hashtag. How are you going to break that up and kind of find the hashtag and then understand is this good or bad? That's where the language model comes in. I'll skip all the way over to the right-hand side now and talk about the text analytics API. So the text analytics API enables three interesting capabilities. The first is language detection. It can look at a body of text and can determine which of 120 different languages it thinks that this text is written in. If you've got a website where you have customers who submit feedback, this is a very excellent tool just to understand, hey, what's the distribution across these thousands or millions of posts that people have made of the various languages? The next thing is the key phrase extraction. That's what I showed earlier. And the other thing that it'll let you do is detect sentiment. And let me describe why this is really interesting. So again, think about how many people have apps where your users can submit unstructured raw text, reviews, things like that. Okay, about 15%. How do you understand what's actually happening in those, right? Are the people happy or sad? Are you know, is it good, is it positive sentiment or negative? You want to be able to understand that. And so what you can do with the text analytics API is very quickly take that text and say, I want to extract out what are the key topics, and then what's the sentiment? And that lets me start to associate and have a bit of a labeled data set to understand, oh, when people are talking about Dave, they're mostly happy. And when they're talking about Lance, they're not very happy. Let's figure out what's going on there. Let's send Lance an email and ask. The final one is the Language Understanding Intelligence Service, or LUIS. And what this allows you to do is kind of take the next step up from text analytics to actually understanding the intent that's behind a bit of text. And rather than kind of talk through both of these, we're going to flip to a demo. And so what we'll do first is I just want to show that text analytics capability. And so here, you know, this is an example of what someone might write on a travel site. Hey, I had a wonderful time. The rooms were wonderful and the staff were helpful. What's going on here? Well, wonderful experience, rooms, staff, and 98% sentiment. Okay, that's kind of interesting. Terrible time. Staff were rude and the food was awful. Okay. Now we're going to go off the rails. Who would like to tell me about their hotel last night? Yeah, go ahead.
I slept well and it was noisy.
Okay. Oh, 43% from a sentiment score. Somebody else want to tell me about their hotel? Yes. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? My shower, so this is bad. I need APIs to help me have this because I don't have a good filter in my head. Just random aside, my shower just stopped. Like, it was on, and I heard this weird noise, like, hissing, and then it just stopped. It came back on about 10 seconds later, but that was a little exciting. Okay, so that's the text analytics API. The other thing to show here is just kind of what that JSON payload looks like. So here we're saying, hey, what were the key phrases? And then there's the sentiment score. So again, this is super easy JSON to just take and extract into your application. But now let's take that next step up into the service that we call Lewis. And what Lewis allows you to do is define entities and intents. And so the intents are what does someone want to do? The entities are what are the nouns that are going to be associated with that intent. And so I have created a Lewis model for ordering pizza. And again, we're going to go off the rails. Please, someone tell me what you would say on the phone or if you were texting to order a pizza. Not all at once.
How about a large pie?
How about a large pie? Ugh. Get logged in. Sorry about that. How about a large pie? Okay. So what this identified was, hey, this is the purchase intent, and it identified that the size is large. Okay. Now, how did I do this? And no, I did not pay that gentleman a Starbucks gift card in order to say that one. But what I did is I defined first entities. The two entities that I'm defining, since I'm a very, very simple pizza parlor, are size and toppings. We don't have anything else. And so let's look at this. I can say that there's a size. Let's look at what happens when we try and add a new entity. You can actually have a hierarchical entity. So if you wanted to say that a pizza consists of size and toppings and sauce, you could go ahead and do that to be more complex. There's also a set of pre-built entities. So this is where you know that you have a number or a temperature or a dimension, or here's the really hard one, date time, right? Date time is super hard. Age is parsing all of that. Like, that seems like like the interview question that I'd never want to face, which is, hey, write a date parser. Like, that's the rest of the day, and you'd still screw it up 8 different ways. But if you think about language, people are going to actually use other things like today and tomorrow. And how do I want to understand those? So you can actually grab the date time entity and use that. And so that's super, super useful. You can also use, we have an entity on the encyclopedia, so this is trained on Wikipedia, and so this will easily recognize kind of well-known things. So I can have pre-built entities, and then what I do is describe an intent. Oops. And so here, I'll describe an intent. What is my intent name? And what is an example, like the very first example that I want to train? So what I did first with pizza was I created the purchase intent. And I had an action parameter that said I want to capture size and toppings, right? Because when I order a pizza, I want size and toppings. Now, where Lewis really shines is up until this point, I haven't really done much. I've created a little bit of a model for what's the intent and what are the entities, but I haven't done any machine learning. I haven't kind of dived into text analytics. And then I start training it, right? And so I say, hey, how about a large pie? I want to recognize that. Let's try large pie with sausage. Okay. Now I've already done a number of utterances, so let's try and find one that it doesn't do too good of a job on. How about a large pie with everything except anchovies? Okay, so here we recognized large as the size. This is a good one because we didn't actually recognize everything, which is actually toppings. And if I were doing this for real, what you would actually want to do is understand, you'd want to create another entity to indicate that someone is subtracting from the order. So here you would want to have like, you know, except, take off, without, you'd want to map those into that entity. We're not going to do that here. But then the cool thing is, so I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to submit that. And what this is actually doing is, what did I just do? So for all the data scientists in the room, I've just labeled some data and I've put that into my model. And I can actually go and train this now. One thing, the train button is kind of hidden down here in the lower left-hand side of the page. This took me a while to find. And I could train this, and then I can actually go and publish it. And what happens when I publish it is I just get a nice URL that I can start throwing things at. So if somebody else order a pizza that doesn't start with how about something pie? How would somebody else order a pizza? Can I please have a large... Have a Four Seasons pizza. All right. I don't know what this is going to do. Okay. So what did this tell me? Well, it said, hey, I'm 99.99999% certain you want to purchase. That's actually not surprising. We only have one intent defined in the system. But even if I put cancel in there or something like that, the probability is going to be fairly high here. And what we see here is it actually on this one, it didn't pick up either of the parameters. Okay? So what this tells me is, hey, you shouldn't actually trigger this action because the two parameters that were required weren't supplied. So now what can I do in my application? I can write back and say, hey, I know you want a pizza, what size? Right? And I can kind of customize the flow in the application, you know, or if it's a messaging app, I can send that back. But this lets me kind of customize that dialogue chain. Okay. Can I have a large with pepperoni and hamburger? Okay, here you'll see, what did we find? Hey, size, as well as the two different toppings. Now, I've trained it before on pepperoni, so it's actually pretty certain. I've never typed hamburger in. But it understands from the language model, can I have a large something with something? That's probably another topping. But here it returns 85%, right? And now, again, what you can do with this is, you know, you'll have to test it out and kind of figure out what works for your application, but say, hey, if it's below 75%, go ahead, confirm. So you wanted hamburger with that? Oh, yeah, okay, great. Right, and so this is how you can actually understand and then customize the way that someone's interacting with this. The final thing that's nice about Lewis is while the service is running, I can actually walk up and say, let me see. Okay, or this will, what this actually shows me is all of the, this is showing me all of the utterances that have occurred. And what I can do here is I can walk through and improve this. So here, if we look at this one, huh, it didn't get pineapples and pizza. Okay, well, that's a little strange, but we know that this is size, and we know that this is a topping, so I'm going to submit that, right? Okay, this Four Seasons one, well, and there's a bug in the UI that won't let me select both words, but this would let me say, hey, this is actually a topping type, and then submit that. And so what this allows me to do is continue to make the model better, right? So what we're doing here is now we've gone beyond just a general purpose model for figuring out intents, and this is actually going to actively learn, right? And so every night I can go and look at, hey, what are all the things that didn't match? Go and match those and then go make the model better. Similarly, we've got suggestions, because we can look at all of them where, say, sorry, let me zoom in. I want to look for utterances that will make it, that will improve the percentage for number of toppings. Okay, so here you'll see, hey, this matched, but it doesn't know what to do here, so I'll say this is a topping and this is a size. I can go ahead and confirm some of these. And so what these allow me to do, again, this is just allowing me to make the model better, and I haven't had to learn any data science or machine learning stuff, right? And so we've got an actively learning API that's out there that's customized around my domain. And so if you want to recognize any type of text to try and extract intent, this is great. You could do this, if we go back to that user-submitted content, you could define things you wanted to flag or alert on. So if somebody writes a review and says, I'm going to cancel my subscription, well, I'd like to recognize out of that block of text, cancel subscription, because that's important to me, because I want to get in there and try and help before this person cancels their subscription, for instance. Okay, so that's a trip around Lewis and text analytics. And Lewis, to me, is a really powerful example of what sits between a fully finished API and kind of the general problem of machine learning. It's kind of a nice in the middle. I get all the benefits of customizing, but I don't have to kind of get all of the control and all of the complexity that comes with all of the control if I kind of drop off into, hey, pick up a text processing library out of Python and go party on. Okay, we'll kind of talk a little bit about the knowledge APIs. I talked about the entity linking service earlier. What this allows you to do is really kind of based on all of the entities that we know about inside of Wikipedia, extract if those entities are appearing in your text. And then the recommendations API, this is the one that we talked about with respect to Portugal Telecom as the second case study. If anyone is doing e-commerce, or if anyone is doing, really where you present the user with a series of choices, where you think that those choices might be influenced by what other people have done, you should look at the recommendations API. It takes three things. It takes your catalog, it takes some information about your users, and it takes your transaction history, just as CSVs. And we'll build a recommendation model on top of that, so you can then say, hey, this is the classic example, oh, someone is looking to buy diapers, we should also suggest to them baby food. is kind of the classic recommendations example. But you can drop this into your web app, you know, in an afternoon. Just as an anecdote, there's a large e-commerce retailer who put this on their website to power their recommendation engine. They had a homegrown recommendation engine. They were looking to make it better. They used this. And in the 12 months since they've been running on that, the amount of revenue increase specifically from recommendations, so we can trace this. This isn't like just making up a number. They've increased the amount of purchases by $60 million from people by surfacing better recommendations to people about other things they may want to buy. And so that's a very, very powerful capability that helps your users because they get things that are more relevant to them that are actually useful because other people have bought them, for instance. And it usually helps you because you're interested in selling more stuff. Okay. The final category to talk about are the search APIs. And these are all a set of APIs. You'll note they're branded the Bing APIs. And that's because that's where the data comes from. And so what this allows you to do is to take the output from Bing and put it into your applications. And this is kind of specialized for both general web search as well as kind of the specific flavors of image search, video search, news search. And what these will allow you to do is very, very quickly take and put those search results into your application. Now, a lot of times people will kind of say, hey, but I don't really need to kind of show a search engine in my app. Let me show something again. This is out of the intelligent kiosk. And so we will grab the, where did it go? Oh, okay. It was right there. It was hiding. The news analytics. And so in order to not pick any news topic that would potentially be controversial, we'll pick Atlanta. You can also do this with major political figures, but I won't. And what you'll see here, so this returns, and this is actually a mashup of the text analytics API as well as the Bing search APIs. And so this lets me see, hey, what are all the things that are going on in Atlanta? For everybody who doesn't know, the reason traffic was absolutely horrible Monday night is Beyonce was playing. So she shows up in a couple of these stories. And then what we've also done is we've taken the text analytics API to get the sentiment on those stories. You know, are these happy? Are they sad? And so why this might be interesting is if you can imagine a call center app and you want to be able to allow your call center representatives to be more personable. And so you want that when somebody calls and they say they're from Atlanta, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if you give them something to talk about while you're waiting for the system to return your account balances or connect you or something. And so this is an example of, hey, I could go grab those news articles. Now, we probably don't want to surface you know, something that's got a big negative sentiment like any of these. You know, we could probably pick something up here and say, hey, you know, and help that customer service representative be able to talk about, you know, a relatively happy topic that's relevant to that individual. We will also see people who will use these APIs to attempt to get more data for correlation, to kind of understand, hey, if something is happening in a specific region, hey, I've decreased sales, for instance, you know, hey, let me go get the news articles from that region over the last 3 days and understand if something has changed, right? So that's kind of powerful. Okay, so next I want to talk about moving to production and scaling. So we've walked through all of the APIs. You've got all of the tools to go ahead and start using them. You're going to write some code. You're going to say, this is fantastic. I'm ready to go to production. And the great thing about this is there's not really a whole lot that you have to do here. We're going to take care of scaling those APIs for you. And so really what you'll do is you're just going to walk up to the Azure portal And we'll log in here in just a sec. And we'll show some relevant search results so that I can talk to the audience about things that are relevant while I'm waiting for this to load. Actually, this one's going to show the internal view. Let me flip to the one that's the normal view. It's really nice. As a Microsoft employee, they give us like the latest bleeding edge daily builds of the portal, which makes it a little tricky when you want to demo them. But so here we are. As you'll note, in the left-hand side, you'll see a cognitive services section. And as long as you've got an Azure subscription, all you have to do here is click New. And what this is going to allow you to do is name the API, Matt's Ignite Demo. You're going to pick what API type you want to have. So I could pick Lewis, for instance. Let me pick the Face API. Then I configure the pricing tier. And this is going to be, each of them have a slightly different pricing and tiering structure. There's a free tier and then there's a standard tier. Some of these have more of them based on the amount of volume. And what this will allow you to do is pay $1.50 for every 1,000 calls with a max throughput of up to 10 calls per second, right? And then there will be other ones that have other tiers that will have higher calls per second or a different amount of included calls that you can go make. But then, and you can switch this on the fly. So you can upgrade from one. If you start getting a huge amount of traffic, you can actually switch to a higher use tier. Once I deploy this, let me go back. Once I deploy one of these, so I'll go and look at Emotion. There's an endpoint out on the internet that I can now call to do this. The only thing that I need are the keys. And I won't click this because then my keys pop up on the screen and then they put this video on channel 9 and then in like 4 months somebody's sending me an angry email about why my account is getting used a whole lot. This is a true story. This has happened before. But you click keys and this is going to give you the keys that you then stick into when you call the APIs. Okay, so that's really all you need to do to take these to production. Once they're deployed through Azure, they're fully supported. The ones that are generally available will have an SLA. You can call up Microsoft support and say, holy cow, the Face API is not working. Please help me, and we'll help you. And you can kind of choose how much volume and throughput that you want to push through those. So we're on the way to wrapping up here. the last thing that I want to talk about is how this fits into overall applications. We've talked very narrowly about these cool APIs that can fit into apps. I just want to kind of talk about the bigger picture of these applications. You know, and ultimately, if we kind of go back to what we started with, we see a lot of people want to go from a bunch of data that's getting generated from sensors or from apps or from people, and they want to get to some kind of action. Right? They want to be able to sell something better. They want to be able to serve the customer better. They want to be able to prevent a customer from churning. They want to shut off a machine before it breaks. And kind of a bunch of magic happens in the middle. And so one of the things that we've talked about is the intelligence APIs inside of cognitive services. But this is really just one piece of the puzzle. And we've put all of these things together, all of the tools that I'm about to show, we've put them together in the Cortana Intelligence Suite. And that's a collection of these services that we think are super, super useful for this problem of going from data to action. And so you can just use cognitive services to do this. If you think about that scenario that I outlined of a travel site wanting to process reviews and being able to understand, hey, are people happy or sad? And gosh, I want to know what they're upset about, the gentleman who was complaining about the shower, for instance. I might want to let that hotel know you've got a problem with the shower because you've had 3 negative reviews that all talked about the showers in the last 2 days. That's a problem, right? You can start to build that out with cognitive services. There's a couple of other things that we think of in this category, including the bot framework. So this is a very easy way to build conversational agents, so you can talk to the software with Skype or Facebook Messenger or Kik or something like that. And now we're going to go right to left across the other categories. And so stepping up from kind of these fully finished APIs, The next tier gives you more control, right? I can do more stuff inside this category. What's the downside? The downside is that I'm going to lose a little bit of convenience. I get the convenience of being able to process images without knowing anything about data science on the right-hand side. But if I know a bunch about data science, I actually want a richer set of tools than just that API. And so that's what you can do with things like Azure Machine Learning and the big data engines like Data Lake Analytics, HD Insight, and the stream processing systems. You need some place to store all of this data. And so kind of the next category of stuff and where we really see people gravitating towards is the big data stores. And so this is Data Lake Store and SQL Data Warehouse. And again, all of these scenarios that I'm talking about, if you think about that travel website that wants to process all of this, you know, I want to keep all of those reviews around for a very, very long time. And I actually also want to keep all of the application telemetry because I want to understand kind of, do people spend more time reading negative reviews than positive reviews? I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to ask that question, but it'd be good to keep all that stuff around in case I want to ask that question. And then the final thing is, as you start to get all of this data, you start to have other problems, which is, how do I move data around? How do I get all of that data in one place? And so we've got a set of services around information management that are really about acquiring all that data, moving it around, and cataloging it. And so as we think about going beyond an application that's using the APIs to be, you know, fully featured and taking advantage of a lot of analytics, there's a number of other tools that we've got in Azure. And the one point I'd like everybody to kind of take away from this is, it's not an either or. It's not you use cognitive services or you use something else. Most of the solutions that we see customers building end up using most of these. That's why we've kind of put them all together. And so it's not really a one size fits all. It's, when do I need to use which Lego block? Is how I really kind of like to think about it. Okay, so now we're wrapping up. And the last thing I just want to kind of close with is, hey, you know, why are we interested in the cognitive services? You know, and really, we've tried to make it super, super easy for you to be able to take some incredible capabilities. Like, this is some of the most cutting-edge research in the world on computer vision and speech processing. You saw some of that in Satya's keynote that we were talking about. And we want to make that so easy for you to be able to use. And so all you have to do is go out, get an account, write a couple of lines of code, and you can put these things into your application inside of any application. So there's a resource slide here with a couple of resources. Feel free to snap pictures of this. The deck will be available later. I would like to thank everyone for coming. I know there's a bunch of great sessions. I'm really humbled that you picked this one. I hope this was super useful. Please fill out the evaluations. That gives me feedback. That helps me get better and helps us plan. Like, if this was what you wanted to hear, please tell us that. If it wasn't what you wanted to hear, tell us that too, because that's going to help us get better. I really appreciate it. Thank you, and I'll take questions after this.